However, I do got to say, though, it does remind me of a Jim Gaffigan joke. When he says, he's like, I don't know about you guys, but he's like, I have the dirtiest thoughts in Catholic Church. He's like, we'll be praying and, you know, like, peace unto you and, ooh, an extra peace for you. The system is set up, right, so to speak. I'm speaking broadly.
Yeah.
All right, not just the Catholic. The system is set up on the premise of, man, you can have all of this great stuff in the world, but this one thing you can't have, right? And human nature is so bent toward that one thing.
Yep. Whole time.
Because we feel like we're missing out. And so whenever it's kind of, I don't want to say oppressed or repressed, but whenever it's set up like that, our spirit and our flesh contends.
Yeah, it's true.
Whether it's gay or not gay.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that to me is the crux of the problem. Like, you know, when you talk about scripture, I mean, I don't think the Catholic Church is, you know, throwing out all scripture, but sexual immorality is in there.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I don't know how many times. And so it's an issue to deal with.
Yeah.
However, that may manifest itself.
A reoccurring problem.
Right. So,
we got to open that worm. I don't know if we can open it. We have time to open that can of worms.
I don't.
Well, human nature is always going to be a problem. And that's a large portion of that is sexuality. And sometimes it's overpower.
Well, for instance, one guy you guys brought up, the priest, I can't remember his name.
Sam Albury.
But who struggles with homosexuality, and he knows that he is.
Yeah.
Very aware.
Yeah.
But yet he knows that if he chose that lifestyle, it would be wrong for him. I'm not saying he's throwing that as a broad brush on everyone, but he knows for him that would be wrong.
Yeah.
It would not be the right lifestyle that God wanted him to live.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Sam Albury. I think he's in the UK.
You can't just not see that. It's a spiritual principle, I mean, and I'm looking at that broadly.
He's Lutheran. He's either Lutheran or Methodist, something like that, yeah. But, yeah. So, I mean, it's the denial of self leads to greater spiritual and self-disciplinary awakenings. It's one of the reasons we fast, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times, Gumby, you kind of turned me on to intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought for sure, because of my metabolism, I would never be able to do it. And it did take time and took discipline. But I was like, you know what? Gumby said if I could, I could still do it. So I want to try it, right? And I had to work on it. First, I had to neglect one meal. And it took a while to get over. All right, cool. Then I had to neglect two meals. That was harder, but I got through it. I only eat one major meal a day now, and yeah. I feel fine. And it was, and I feel a greater sense of self. My body feels more in balance. My system feels better. But it was only through the denial of self that I discovered something that was greater. Yeah. And I think that's a large part of life, is learning how the denial of self brings you to greater awakenings.
Yeah, I think it's a very real spiritual principle, you know, where if I gave into every attraction of the opposite sex, or even same, that, you know, I'd be biting from the apple all the time. So you have to contend with it and be self-aware and deal with it, you know. And I feel like if you feel like it's okay to just say, you know what, I feel it. It's human nature, right? And I'm just going to give in.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I feel like that was. It's like, it's okay. Yeah. We can have both.
I would say not too different than from the guy who goes out clubbing every weekend and taking a different girl home every night, right? You're still just giving into your urges. I mean, the lack of being able to control yourself, the lack of self-discipline, it leaves you in control of human, not even just emotion, but human urge.
Yeah.
So you are no longer in control of you. Your urges are in control of you. And now you're actually devolving rather than evolving. So,
in other words, I guess what I'm saying is that that movement that I saw at the funeral delegitimizes and devalues the overall movement that I may feel for the LGBT, I never get it right, but their community.
Yeah.
And maybe even the support from the Catholic Church for them.
I feel like we levy that charge of like that they're giving into the flesh. We only send that in one direction typically. Like,
absolutely not.
No.
Abby Zacharias.
I put it against
Jimmy Swaggart.
I put it against heterosexuals all the time.
But like, what's practically speaking, other than like one is gay and one is straight, how do you categorize someone in a committed monogamous relationship with a person of the same gender and a person, the same person, but the opposite gender, the same relationship? But in both cases, they are either holding steadfast to monogamy or they are giving into the flesh and having relations with a single person. So the difference right there is fundamentally is, are they gay or are they straight?
No, we're talking about people giving into urges. We're not talking about relationships. That's a different subject. I would say that that's actually almost a red herring.
We didn't see anybody in that video having sex, though.
We're actually not talking about people in committed relationships. We're talking about people who are distracting based on their own ego. Relationships could be a whole episode by itself. We could talk about that all by itself. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people using their identity of something and forcing that on somebody else's event or place of worship. We're not talking about committed relationships.
I would like to separate, though, the part about their ego, because what if they are wholly doing it as an obligation to their deceased friend, that this is what they would want? Isn't that like the ultimate selfless act?
No, nope, just the opposite. If it's a focus on you, it's the polar opposite.
But if it's not a focus on that, it's a focus on somebody else.
And from what I understand of their mystery was, it seems to be counterintuitive to what she was actually doing. So I would say what they did was actually goes against a lot of what she was actually trying to accomplish.
How so?
From what I understand. And mind you, I haven't gone deep into her life, but from what I understand, it seems like she was actually trying to help people out and, you know, help them get them off the streets and straighten out their lives and find equal rights. And this doesn't seem to do that. This actually seems to go against everything else that she was trying to do.
I thought even the beginning of the video said that she was an advocate for sex workers. So I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that... Yeah. What does that mean? Prostitution?
Yeah.
Trafficking?
Yeah. An advocate for those who, for whatever circumstances, are engaged in prostitution. Yeah. So I would say that they, like, to highlight those people as someone worthy of ministry doesn't undermine what her goal was at all. It actually affirms it.
I don't think so.
I would say that that funeral represented her lifestyle. I would agree with that. I would agree with that. But again, I mean, you know, if this was about the person who passed away and about their faith, about where they're spending eternity, that would turn me away from, if I was a complete non-believer and I was looking for something spiritually deep that had to do with my soul and where eternity lies for me, if that was something that was important to me,
yeah,
that ain't it.
I have,
regardless if it was in the Catholic Church or not,
yeah, I have friends who are same-sex couples and same-sex friends. They would not find this respectful, and I know that.
As the interviewers at the end said, who were,
yeah, they would not find this respectful. This actually, if you're trying to find rights, equal rights, and help people out, this actually just set it back a little bit, honestly. And it's because of the lack of respect that comes out of it. that's a problem. If you're trying to help people, if you're trying to give people more, you have to, it's a two-way street and you have to give and get. And so I would say it didn't help. I mean, if I walk in somebody else's house and I wipe my boots off on their furniture, that's not helping. I could claim all kinds of cool things. I could say that I'm trying to exemplify my rights as an American worker, and I'm trying to show you what I'm doing. See what I'm doing? All I'm going to show is the disrespect I have for your house.
How the heck was Fox News there?
I have no idea.
I think that wasn't there a live stream of it? I think that was from a live stream.
Okay.
Probably.
I pose one final question.
Okay.
What if Pope Francis was the direct, you know, parochial or rector or whoever in charge, or even in the position of Bishop Dolan, what would a Pope Francis have done?
I have no idea because he wasn't there.
I don't understand the question. Like, if he was there.
So what I'm speaking to, like in terms of he was in charge of the situation, like, so what I'm speaking to is even if doctrinally they're basically on the same page, there has been a big difference in approach towards LGBTQ inclusion and as these issues come up between Pope Francis and the American church. And I'm curious what folks think Pope Francis would have done.
I have no idea. It's kind of one of those, I hate to say it, but it's kind of an arbitrary question because he wasn't. And so we don't know. And so at that time, it's just guesswork.
But he has been openly critical of the stance that, like, the culture war positive stance that American bishops have taken in relating to gay people.
That's true. And I know he has an open ear for that because obviously, as we know, the Synod on Synodality, he has James Martin there, right? So if Father James Martin is there, he has open ear for it. But from what I've seen from Pope Francis, he still definitely likes a respectful bridge between everything that's taking place. So
I think he wouldn't have said a thing.
Sure. We can guess that, but again, he wasn't there, so that's just guesswork. So as everybody knows, I'm a peer review junkie, right? So I'm not one of those people to just throw out, oh, I think this would happen, slap it down. We don't know. It didn't happen. So it's like, you know, it's kind of like when I'm researching events across history, I'm not superposing what could have happened. I don't care. It didn't happen. So I care about what did happen.
I think just from an objective point of view with regarding the Pope and some of his stuff and his stances on the whole issue is that if he was invited to go, that he would choose not to go and kind of take a middle of the road approach. That's my view.
I can see that. Yeah, I was thinking more of like if he was the priest, it just happened, or if he was the and it just happened.
Because he's damned if he does and he's damned if he don't.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the instance where Pope Francis did call out the stance of the American bishops in stuff kind of adjacent to this. I can't remember what it was, though. He's definitely been critical of the culture war position that a lot of American bishops have taken. Well,
and I don't disagree with that because the culture war, quote unquote, a lot of it's based on people's political views as opposed to the life of the church and the salvation of people and the welfare of people and the health of people. And if you look at Pope Francis, everything has been care for people and their souls. That's a big difference from what a lot of people are doing because most people are standing on political stances. So, and there's a big difference between how do we take care of this person as opposed to what is my political party? So he has made very clear to everybody that he will do whatever he has to do to take care of people. Yeah.
I have a great aunt who's a trans. Yeah. So I'm not saying this, my point of view, from someone who completely hates them or rejects them.
Oh, not at all.
As a matter of fact, my mother just met with her probably last week. she was telling me, because her views are far more right.
Right.
I'm talking Trumpy right.
Yeah.
So, she's so uncomfortable with it, but at the same time, she doesn't know what to do with the piece in her that knows it's also family and still wants to love them.
Yeah.
You know, it's the great wrestling. And I just remember when I was really young and my parents, this is the first time I was meeting her. I get confused sometimes, but it wasn't too long after the transition. My dad was having a really hard time with it because he was really close to his uncle, what he remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a transition. I don't know why. I don't know what spurred it. I don't know any of that, honestly. All I remember was the conversation my parents, more specifically my dad, had with me. It's like, hey, so-and-so's coming over. It may seem a little odd or different, but I don't want you to say anything. Mm. That was literally it. Because, you know, at the time, you know, I was, you know, when you're younger, your filters aren't quite developed and something might seem a bit off. And surely it did. And I remember from a young child, I'm like, this is my aunt. She's huge, and like very muscular. And I've never, it really deep voice. So I don't know if she was doing any kind of other therapy other than that, but it just felt so weird. Thinking back about it, I don't know if it was more weird because, you know, they prepped me for it and put preconceived notions in my mind about it.
Interesting.
Or it was my own general reflections in the moment of it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But I remember that feeling. And, you know, I just remember my dad said, pretty much threatened me. If you say something stupid, I'm going to slap you.
Nice.
So that's how I grew up with it. So yeah. I, you know,
yeah.
We all love them. None of our family, we are very right, conservative, and evangelical. But we have dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is that even on here on the podcast, we don't have any ill will towards anybody same-sex attracted or transitioning or or none of that, not at all.
But the little bit that I know about her, I think if she were at that funeral, she would probably say, "You're a bunch of fools."
Hmm. And to be clear, I didn't get any of that in that debate at all. With that, like you guys were speaking against these people in general, it is a legitimate like thing that everybody has to wrestle for from every perspective. Is how do we engage in these different spaces, and what is I think there is a tug between like, this is somebody else's space and this is our space by birthright, by baptism, right? Or just by being the minority in a majority culture, right? That we have to say something in that. I think that the tension is going to continue in a lot of different ways.
Sure.
Oh yeah. And there's again, we can definitely cohesively and nicely disagree on that. So, and that's cool. And I don't mean any disrespect. Again, I have dear friends.
There's no choke marks on anybody's throat.
That's right. That's right. I have absolute respect for my friends who have transitioned, and for my friends who are same sex. I don't think any differently of them. I really don't. I love them as my friends because they're my friends. So, I mean, yeah, that's it. So, that being said, there are some weird people out there. Some very weird people out there. And I'm going to share a clip right now, and then we'll open the conversation.
All right.
But we're going to watch the clip first, because just we have to see it.
You In 2023, following one of the most legendary and prophetic ministerial careers the world has ever seen, my father, the late Dr. Thomas R. Horn, began what would become his final book. After collaborating with Defender Publishing's Ali Anderson and myself, he had just completed his master manuscript before his untimely passing in October of last year.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at her.
During his final conversations, he was still emphasizing that this message had to get out, that it was of paramount importance that the world was made aware of what was coming.
Society has absolutely no idea what they're embracing, what they've invited in, even welcomed it as the future savior of humanity. This will ultimately be the one thing that brings about our own demise.
If humanity survives, it will unequivocally alter life as we know it.
By the time people realize the danger that they've embraced, it will be too late. It will have become unstoppable.
Updating social credit score, citizen 1934265.
One final book. One final warning. The world is not ready for what is coming.
Dr. Thomas R. Horn, Joe Artis Horn, Ali Anderson.
Horn.
Summoning the Demon, coming March 2024 from Defender Publishing.
I'm buying it right now.
Yeah, I, honestly, I don't care how much propaganda it is. I want to see the movie.
Is this going to be a trilogy?
Oh, man.
This is second only to, like, the great Star Wars trilogy.
The one huge problem is you just showed us this after we've both had multiple, we've all had multiple rums of Cokes that we all really have to pee.
My Lord, that was a great trailer. The production quality was phenomenal. I mean, more satire, but
there's a part where like they're looking at, like, half of it's like they're looking at computers, like something's supposed to be happening off that. And then there's, like, the FBI agents come in and they're, like, hauling them out. Like, they're, like, having them at gunpoint with, like, the laser sights or whatever, leading them away from the computers. Like, it was, like, I don't know. Like, the environment, like, it reminded me of, like, an episode of 24, like, the bullpen, where they, like, all the people are on the computers opening up a socket for, you know, Jack Bauer to get through or whatever.
That was, like, the greatest trailer ever.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I had no words.
So what's going to happen in part two?
That was almost intense. That was for real.
There was so much crammed in there. It's hard to unpack. So obviously there's some kind of
AI,
social standing for credit scores, which I guess China is a little bit partially based on right now.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's
but there's a lot. Man, there's so much to unpack right there.
Yeah.
So we need to sell a book. How do we do this?
It's basically the Great Reset, right? Is that what it is?
That seems what we're going for.
Yeah. But I'm assuming AI was a big piece of it, because I saw the missiles being blown up, and it kind of for me implied that we lost control over, I don't know, certain things, and things are just operating on their own now.
Remember the movie War Game?
Yes.
The AI starts to take over, starts to prep the rockets for launch, and seems to be kind of like what they're gearing for in this modern War Game type of feel.
Very, very well done.
Yeah. I'd give it a 7 out of 10. Yeah. Need a few more explosions. It wasn't Michael Bay enough.
I'm just sitting here thinking, imagine you're like this guy's son in the video. Like, and you want to get your inheritance. You've been living high off the hog your whole life. And all you have to do to keep that money flowing is to just agree with your dad's BS a little bit longer.
Yeah, it's contingent upon selling this, son.
Am I supposed to know Allie Anderson from somewhere? Like, maybe it just sounds like it's, like, familiar from, like, I don't know, it's a name.
I just assumed it was a daughter who got married.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know.
What's this thing called? Sky News? Sky News, right?
Skywatch TV. Skywatch.
Skywatch TV.
Summoning the demon.
Earlier in pre-production, I called it Skynet. No. Very confused. I can't find any information about her.
Why have I heard of him, though? Horn.
It's probably been Aaron.
have we talked about him before?
Which one?
Horn, the father.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I have brought him up multiple times.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, no, Horn was a firm believer in, let's just say, 666.
Gotcha. So was he like a Nephilim guy?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Nephilim, giants, hidden things underneath the ground in Afghanistan, all of that.
Is he a flat earther?
Not a flat earther.
Oh.
Not as far as I know, anyhow.
It's not that unreasonable.
I've never pulled up the flat earth from him, but
okay,
definitely hidden giants underground and all that stuff. Hates the Catholic Church. He firmly believes the Catholic Church is part of the whole beast thing.
The Antichrist.
Can you summarize for us Skywatch TV or Skywatch?
So Skywatch TV is an organization. It's hyper evangelical. I wouldn't say hyper evangelical. It pulls together the ideas of the end times and technology and stories of the Inquirer and shoves them all together inside of their podcast / newsletter / book series, and they hyper over sensationalize every last ounce of it, and every last ounce of it is fun to watch, but at the same time you realize it's a lot of pulp fiction.
they are modern dispensationalists.
They make dispensationalists look like babies.
Wow.
Oh yeah, like they're way beyond dispensationalists.
Do they sell, like, the prepper kits, like the pre-made meals to stick in your bunker?
Hey, I have.
Of course.
Oh, okay. I was trying to figure out what the primary financial motivation is here.
Well, and books and videos. Hello.
Of course. So the crazy thing. So I was, like, imbibing in their podcast feed earlier just to try to. I'd done this before, and I didn't feel like I got the picture that I got today. So I. You had sent us like a link to this article about the Mark of the Beast or something like that. And I just decided to like search that in the podcast feed because I needed something to listen to while I was like doing some chores or whatever, you know, catch up and figure out what's going on here. And what loaded up was completely unrelated to the title of the podcast or to the description. It was actually this like happy-go-lucky, like people talk. It was like coffee talk with Christians or something like that, and it was just a bunch of people talking about like, oh yeah, you know, God doesn't demand perfection of us, it's okay to have messy, like it was like Rachel Hollis like girl wash your face type stuff. But then in the middle it would advertise that like, oh, if you're a fan of this show, you know, write in here or subscribe to this thing and we'll send you a book from Skywatch. So it was like this like really nice, like jolly thing that was also reinforcing like very conservative Christianity, but then also like sending you conspiracy theories in the mail.
Oh, it's yeah. Big time conspiracy theory. Big time.
That to me, you know, kind of like we were talking about on the previous subject with, you know, when you kind of have people who are so extreme they debase maybe whatever your movement it is you're hoping to promote.
Yeah,
that's that.
Yes. Yeah.
And there is nothing I view conservative about that.
I mean, even when I was an evangelical, I would look at this and be like, really? I really?
I'm just going to say it. I mean, I think it's cultish.
Oh, yeah. It's way cultish. Yeah. Yeah. It preys on people's fears, which is why it's so prevalent, why people fall into it. Because what you're saying is, hey, if you don't believe this, you might die, right? So it's playing into their fears. Oh, here's the Pope. it's playing into their fears because they want you to believe that if you don't jump into what they believe, not only will you die, you're going to lose everything you have. Your kids will be tortured to death. They play into every possible fear you could imagine.
You're going to be a microchip drone for the establishment. That was so the other like podcast I listened to, like their most common segment is the 5 and 10, where it's like 5 news stories in like 10 minutes or something like that, with an advertisement for their crazy materials in the middle of it. But also like it's got that like level of like injected commentary to the news that you're just like, this is clearly just like written by like the one guy who's like reciting it. I can't remember his name. Like there's clearly no like bureau of news people behind this. And like a lot of it was focused on pro-Russia propaganda.
Of course. Of course.
Like it was very much like Ukraine is a bunch of, you know, crazy, like, I don't know, duplicitous evil people. And like one point it's like, Ukraine's about to lose the war, or like Ukraine is invading Russia, this kind of stuff. And then the, like other parts were like, he would keep saying undocumented immigrants, or as we referred to them in old fashioned terms, illegal aliens. Like, so it would be very much about like these people are invading us. And then they would casually interject stuff about people getting microchipped for, you know, all monetary transactions in the future, or like, you know, a one world, like a universal money system or stuff like that. Like it, like every opportunity, like take some random news story, like you're just listening to news and put some crazy conspiracy theory into it and then sell a book during the commercial break.
Well, of course. I mean, look at the latest, the latest article.
Oh my God.
Powder keg. How modern conditions are priming society to embrace the beast system right under the nose of sleeping church. Article 27. Is the Pope pushing for Ubi?
The whole thing is one run-on sentence. Like that headline right there is very demonstrative of the whole process.
Yeah. Ubi? What is Ubi?
Oh, good Lord. That's
universal basic income.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. It's diving into the idea of the monetary system that's supposed to be the one world order, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, but it all dives down into how do we tell everybody that everybody's evil except for us?
Yeah.
Don't believe any branch of the church except for what this one news source tells you is truth.
That must remind, like, I keep thinking back to that show I was listening where it was just like these people casually, like, it was Coffee Talk. I don't remember the title of it, but because they had like one guy, they had a bunch of women talking, and they had this one guy who was an author of some books with like very like innocuous sounding titles. And they had one woman who kept reminding us that the only perfect person was Jesus Christ, and that it's okay to embrace your imperfection, but also. I can't remember what I was saying here. Like it very much had this undertone that there was us, these reasonable people, and then there was them. And it was like just like a very casual, non-committal, not very imposing way of introducing that. So you then could get into the deep stuff that would make you hate immigrants and presumably many other groups that aren't just white evangelicals.
Yeah. I mean, how to know if you're in a cult 101.
Yep.
Everybody else is wrong. and they're all going to hell.
Well, and honestly, that's why if you look at, you look at Brian Godowa, a very good reformed evangelical type. He has a good idea of what Christianity is, historic Christianity, right? He's not thinking that there's a future beast that's going to rain down on your head, that every other branch of the church is evil. He understands what Christianity is, where it came from, where it's going, right? So it's not like it's an exclusively Catholic idea, right? It's if you look at a lot of Reformed Christians and a lot of evangelical Christians, they understand what historic Christianity is and where we've come from, and we're not making everything out to be demonic. So it's one of those things we really have to dive into, because historic Christianity is something that is a truth that we all, as I refill everyone's cup, is a truth that we understand from a historic viewpoint, because there is a modernist idea of what the church is. And the modernist idea of what the church is guiding it to these weird sci-fi type, I don't know. It's definitely Hubbardish.
Ron L. Hubbard.
Yeah. Definitely Hubbardish.
Well, I mean, all right. So I will confess that I feel like personally there are big issues with our currency and global elites.
Yeah, hands down.
So to say that there are no conspiracies regarding that, I do. I've had for a while. Yeah. But the whole AI thing, I don't know.
Technologically, there are several people who have already said that AI is currently reaching its highest threshold for the current technology, mm-hmm. and that we're not going to see another peak for a while.
Is that what they want you to think?
They're saying it could be in 2 days or it could be in 10 years. But they're saying that currently it's hit a ceiling. And for example, if you go into ChatGPT right now and you say, if it takes 3 towels 3 hours to dry, how long will it take 9 towels to dry? And it will tell you 9 hours. Not realizing that doesn't relate to the drying time. So AI has reached a very specific threshold right now. It has a hard time doing any kind of math that's over basic math. It has a hard time relating allegory in mathematical terms. So it's currently reached an area where it's peaking. Now, there will be a breakthrough at some point. Like I said, could be in 2 days, could be in 10 years. We don't know. But it's currently hitting a peak where they're not sure where to go next. You know, and that's coming out of really top quality articles from Science Daily, and, you know, really good places that have a grasp on the technology that's going into AI right now, the programming that's going into.
When it comes to this propaganda, like, they would pick whatever the latest technology was and said that it somehow is going to be this harbinger of some terrible future.
Yeah.
But like, ironically, like AI, if anything, like its emergence probably does the service of like demonstrating what we all need to know, is that like basically everything on the internet is a lie, including this stuff.
Right.
Well, I would say that our viewpoint in regards to AI might be a little different if we were in Palestine.
All right.
And if we were the Gazans, we might have a different viewpoint on that, because the Israeli government uses AI for bombing.
Yeah.
They use it in their system. It's out in the open. Just look it up.
Yeah.
They use AI in how they choose to target Gaza to find quote unquote Hamas. They called it the gospel, the Israeli government. I'm not making that up.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah.
So, you know, is it evil? Can be used for it, for sure.
I think any technology can and often does get used for evil. Yeah, it's like, if it can be used for war, it gets used for war.
Yeah.
Because, and here's one thing I will say, because I give our current and previous president a lot of crap. But I do love what's being pushed through right now. They're trying to push through a couple of protocols to rein in corporations on certain topics. And actually, Tlaib is trying to pass a really good a bill right now that will restrict anybody in Senate or Congress from engaging in any kind of profit sharing from war companies.
Hmm.
I could back that all day long. Yeah. Because if you're going to restrict government officials from war profiting, I'm all for that.
That's a pretty serious conflict of interest to profit from killing people.
Exactly.
You can pass the law.
Pass that bill today.
I'm behind it. However, I'm not sure if we truly know the full implications of what that means. General Electric?
Well,
think about that in your home.
That is true. That is true.
Think about not being able to fly a Boeing airplane anymore.
Well, it's specifically geared towards wartime companies.
Right, but it's the same company that makes all those things,
is
what I'm saying.
It's true.
But it's not that those companies can't exist, is that like congressmen can't invest in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's the biggest takeaway from that bill they're trying to pass right now. And I'm all for that. Frankly, I'm for term limits on everything that's, you know, on Capitol Hill. But I do think that all war exchanges for money, currency, stock, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I think it should all end, or at least cease or pause you are on Capitol Hill.
I'm behind that. I'm behind that 100%. I just think that the conflict of interest and the overlap of so many industries with our military is far beyond in what we really know. It's huge.
Yeah.
And to wake up to that reality, I think, is what, you know, this kind of whole situation is really bringing to light here with the whole Israel-Gaza thing. I mean, so many industries related to funding them.
Yeah.
In America, I mean, including banks.
Absolutely.
Caterpillar, General Electric. Oh, I mean, you can go on and on and on and on. So, shipping.
Yeah.
Get all of our products here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's immense.
What's funny is that's the way it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
Who made the Nazi uniforms? Hugo Boss.
Mm.
Yeah. Volkswagen made the Nazi cars. Actually, it was some of the banks that eventually became the Fed are the ones that financed them.
Yeah.
So if you look at wartime financing, propaganda, merchandise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the companies have always financed what they will make money off of, regardless of who they're financing. So I'm all for them passing a bill that ceases operations of that when you're sitting in a place that represents our country.
True. But then it comes down to legalities, because we don't define war as war anymore. We have conflicts.
Mm.
We have isolated conflicts. You know, we have humanitarian love bombs to drop on other countries, not bombs. You know,
friendly fire, right?
We have spreading democracy. It comes down to legality anymore, because
gunfire.
When was the last time a president has declared a war?
Oh my lord.
So corporate has worked around this for a long time.
Yeah. It's true.
It's complicated. It really is complicated. That's how these people get really wealthy, mega wealthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
It needs
to cease.
I was gonna say, like, going back to the AI thing, I think it was interesting, both the Israeli military and the Skywatch TV people rely on the perception that AI is really smart and is getting smarter all the time and it's going to keep growing in its smartness exponentially. The interesting thing about the Israeli implementation to figure out, like, say, like bombing sites, is that actually the fact that AI is pretty stupid,
it's dumb,
is a form of, like, basically, like, laundering the violence, the perpetuating, like, oh, we just bombed a hospital. Oh, well, that was the AI. That was the best intelligence we had.
Exactly. It becomes a scapegoat.
Yeah. Whereas the Skywatch TV is basically like, because it's not like a thing that's really happened. Like, if they can convince you that AI is going to be smart enough that it's going to provide a clone of us that's going to do work for us and that's going to somehow lead to some crazy thing going on, like, that's just all like vibes and like ideas. It doesn't really have to happen for them to sell books.
That's a good point. I mean, because a lot of people have been noticing that in regards to Gaza, that it hasn't been very discriminate. It's just been indiscriminate in terms of how they're choosing to deal with it.
It's not terribly different than the WMDs of the Iraq war. Like, oh, our best intelligence, quote unquote, said that there was WMDs here. Oh, but they weren't. Like, you basically have outsourced the bad outcome to this amorphous entity. Like, it's just even better when you can say that amorphous entity that had the bad intel was actually an algorithm.
Yeah, and we're still looking for them.
There's always been a piece of that. So he'll remain nameless. I used to know a reconnaissance Marine. He was trained during the 70s. So, and he explained to me that what the difference was that in the 70s to today, they took away all the fun stuff, is what he said. So he said they used to teach us everything. And I said, what do you mean everything? He said, well, I can teach you how to turn a car into a bomb with a screwdriver, a piece of wire, and one stick of gum. I said, no, you can't. Then he explained it to me, and I was like, oh, okay, never mind, you can. And it was the most simple thing ever. And he explained a lot more to me at the time, too. We were pretty good friends at the time. But I was like, okay, so that's legit. And it was, he said assassination and reconnaissance. He's like, all of this is actually really easy. It just takes the cojones to do it. But to relate to some of the AI they had at that time, they actually had nav tracking for their soldiers going into the Gulf War. And their batteries ran out. And so they couldn't figure out how to get back. So they actually sent his team in. These are guys who are from Vietnam, right? From that era. They sent these guys in. They went out, found them. Their mission was to actually blow up a couple of rocket silos. They blew up the rocket silos and then brought them home. So to show you how bad technology can be in the field. So, yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. In fact, there was one soldier I was talking to, and they were talking about chips in the vaccines, right? And he said, I've got a chip in me. He said, we were required to have those during wartime. They could never find me. That's how efficient they are. He's like, trust me, they're not putting them inside those vaccines. They don't work.
It actually reminded me when I was listening to one of those 5 and 10 podcasts, you could tell they were acquiescing to how strict the censors are on mainstream sources about vaccine info, because they had this article, this news report about the increase in like heart disease or other cardiac conditions among even young people. And the guy was like, well, that's really increased in the last 5 years. And we all know what's happened in the last 5 years. And he didn't say anything more than that.
You're like, GMOs? It's GMOs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Trump family influence in foreign affairs. Because Sky News, I mean, obviously they have a following because they've just been able to do all this stuff for a long enough time that the guy who is propagating on the messages has died and now his son is carrying it on. Like, what's the audience? And like, I'm not even like, is like, what's the direct audience versus like does their stuff filter into like other sources that maybe we're more familiar with?
So here's the hard part of this is that they actually pull legitimate scholars and doctors in to explain things in the Bible and history. And they kind of twist and put their own ideas on it after that. So
that's what I mean. I feel like I don't think that everything that you're talking about might not necessarily on its own be illegitimate. They may have some genuine concerns and all of that, but the way that it was pushed out like that was
a little Inquirer like.
Anyway. So do you think there's like a lot of people who go on here because they're like, oh, I'm a scholar, I know this thing, and oh, here's an audience, and maybe they want to pay me a little bit money, but like maybe I'm not even like aware of, and I definitely don't agree with all they're doing.
Oh, I know a scholar who had to go through that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and he did not ascribe to a lot of things that they teach, but scholars do try to get truth out there, and they will value platforms to speak on.
Right?
So, and he did, again, he did not ascribe to the things that they teach on this platform. And he did make an appearance on one of their shows.
Huh.
So.
Interesting.
Hmm.
That made me think of, like, once you brought that up, I just finished an audiobook, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism by Tim Alberta. It's really interesting. It's very long, so I recommend getting an audiobook and putting on like 1.4 speed. It's extremely long, but Tim Alberta, he did he was one of the writers, I believe, for the New York Times that did like the biographies for presidential candidates. So like he did the biography for Trump when he was running originally in 2016, and not as like a partisan piece, but like, if you write about Trump in an objective way, you're going to write about some very unsavory things that have happened, especially as they relate to New York real estate.
It's true.
And but he happened to be someone who had grown up in evangelicalism, and his dad was a pastor for a church in Michigan. And his dad's church had become kind of, radicalized in the way a lot of evangelical churches have in this era. And his dad died suddenly. He went back to eulogize his dad, obviously participate in the funeral. And during the funeral, goings on, parishioners, of this church were coming up and being like, why are you against Trump? They were calling him out for his work on this biography. And he goes on to write, because he's a very good reporter, he gets these extraordinary interviews with key players in the like very hard right evangelical space. Like he has like Robert Jeffress like on the record, like saying like very vulnerable things. Like somehow he has that gravitas to him. But he was talking about certain folks who had written books or done other things who were like just trying to like, talk about like say like religious beliefs and all that. And they were getting ushered into these platforms that were espousing like things that they were really not okay with, like oh, I talk about this religious belief and suddenly I am opening for a political rally and I need to decide right now if I'm going to go on the stage or not. So like there was very much this sense of like the frog boiling in the water, where you are an expert on the specific thing with an audience that's adjacent to the audience of something like Skywatch. And like suddenly now it has occurred to you that you are about to platform the craziest crap ever and you don't know what to do.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. So someone like Skywatch and their whole platform, they probably have, if I just had to guess, most of Trump's support and every one of his supporters.
At least on the evangelical side. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure every evangelical probably agrees. It's bad. Yeah. Trump would not be in office if it wasn't for evangelicals.
It's true.
So they voted him 80%+.
Yeah.
Maybe more than that.
So, yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, I already said it's a call. I don't know how else to say it.
Kind of like speaking of that, kind of an ingenious thing about about, like, you don't even have to be particularly precise about how you're fear-mongering. If you have a candidate who plays off of general fears about displacement of power or just like stuff changing, mm-hmm. and you have a platform that is like, stuff's going to change, it's bad, there's these bad people, like, they're like, everything aligns. Like, you don't even have to be particularly precise about your message. Your message becomes implicitly in favor of this candidate just because you're vaguely are like pointing in the same general direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's everything sucks.
And even before Trump, though, honestly, I came to the realization, being in the evangelical movement, I don't know, 2001, 2002, that something is really way off. Because everything at that point, when it finally hit me and my wife, we're sitting in a service, and I won't say who or where, but everything seemed exploitive. Mm. Everything about the gospel. How they were raising money, how you weren't doing enough. You know, it was guilt-ridden. I mean, everything was just exploitive about what it meant to be an evangelical.
Yeah.
And we just had this kind of moment, my wife and I, where we just looked at each other. We're like, we're the only ones here who have a problem with this. Everyone else agrees and is on board. I'm like, we didn't know what else to do, but we knew we needed to jump ship.
Right.
And, you know, we did. And I'm glad we made that choice because it sent us on a whole different path.
Mm, yeah.
But
there's something to be said for that, for sure. There's like, that's one of the things I appreciate at my parish. There's twice a year that I hear about money. Only twice. One, it comes to Catholic relief funds. We'll bring it up once a year, only if you can give. And that's because they help so many people in disasters and hurricanes and everything else. It's not towards anything that's like, Skywatch. It's towards actually helping people in disasters, right? So helping people when things happen. And the only other time I hear about funds is at the end of the year when they give you the report showing you where the money went. That's it. Those are the only two times that the whole year we ever hear about money. That's it. That's the only time he talks about it. I appreciate that.
Yeah. You know what? That brings up a great point. That was one of the key moments before we found the current church where we're at, and we love it because I feel like they're living out the gospel.
Yeah.
All right. But one of the churches we visited, because we were church hopping before we found this church, that really like just reinforced, it was like the last nail in the coffin for us. And it was around this time, actually Easter. We visited one of the mega churches in a wealthy area here in the Cleveland area. I won't say where, I won't say whom. Very well known, a lot of quote unquote famous for our area people went there. And it was around Easter. Well, it just happened to also be a time that they were fundraising for their new building. Uh-huh. This was Easter, and we were there on an Easter Sunday. We thought we couldn't go wrong. We're going to get our message that we need.
Easter.
It's all about Jesus and Easter eggs, right?
Yeah.
So we get there, and the whole thing, the whole sermon is pushing and geared around raising money. So we left there thinking, oh my God, if I was not a believer and that was the first time I had ever visited a church and I was looking for something, I would never have found it there.
Hmm. Yeah.
That would have been my impression of what it means to be a Christian. And I would have walked away from it completely. Because it reeked of just a scumbag.
And that's not even a good sales guy.
Yeah, right. Be good about it.
A good sales guy. It's about you, not about me.
Right. This is like, you know, Warren Jr. preaching about about their building fund.
I think so much can change when you realize that position a certain way. I'm going to put this. If you find the right cross constituency for your church's beliefs, you can suddenly tap into a lot of money. So there was
that's a good point.
A little mini controversy with someone who likes to stir the pot on left Cath Twitter, who isn't really even particularly that left wing. And, you know, she was noting that a Catholic chastity speaker who I brought up earlier in the podcast, was making a decent amount of money according to official filings and had a $2.5 million valued home.
Wow. That's considerable.
Yeah. And this is person at all.
I'll keep them in prayer.
Yeah. And I was realizing that, like, oh, like they hadn't really just spoken about chastity in years, that they were deep into the anti-trans, like the Abigail Schreier type stuff that has been very popular even on Fox News and stuff like that. So like, where am I going with this? But you can, like, if you can, as a church community, if you can tap into money that, say, is invested in propagating certain culture wars, like, say, like the end times, or this political party represents the mark of the beast, or this group of people is really bad. Now you've got money, like anybody who is just talking about their beliefs would not make this kind of money.
Yeah.
But if they had decided to preach a different gospel, which I would say this person has, they suddenly can afford a very large house off their book royalties.
Yeah.
They can get a lot of speaking gigs. They can get top billing on the biggest speaking gigs in both their religious community and outside of that.
Mm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Because now we're getting into the nuance of the evangelicals. Because I don't think a horn would necessarily be that attractive to the wealthy, wealthy professional Christians.
Okay.
Who might fall under the evangelical branch. Because the one church I'm talking about was a very wealthy church.
Okay.
And they did not preach like end time stuff like that. It was a prosperity church. That promoted that, and that was their aim.
Yeah,
there is definitely genres,
and so that's why I'm like, oh my god, this is all bad. You know, either here I'm feeling like, you know, at any minute the sky's gonna crack open and the trumpets are gonna sound, and you know, and or here, you know, I don't make enough money, so therefore someone in my family has to be a sinner. We're all sinners because we don't have enough faith because we're not as wealthy as everyone else.
Right.
Can't win.
Well, that's because you have to believe more.
But what's interesting is even like the more normie, like church that has a lot of wealthy parishioners could still end up sending money to the more fringe cause because of like the alignment of goals. Like they're like, if you draw a circle around Cleveland, and you go to the outer ring suburbs, you're going to touch a bunch of like Catholic parishes where there is tons of money.
Yeah.
And that money will fund far right causes, not because the majority of parishioners believe that, or even because it's preached from the pulpit, but because it's seen as part of a political movement that, like, if I support these people, like that they're preaching something I agree with or something that is touching a lot of ears that will cause people to vote in a way that I vote, that suddenly now you've got all the normies going towards Sky Watch or going hard on anti-trans propaganda, even when they don't really even particularly care either way about trans people or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing.
Well, thanks, Keith. Now I can't go anywhere.
Neither can I, really.
Dang it.
Well,
converted to Catholicism tonight.
And then you found all the same problems.
Right, that's true.
It's less, though. It's less. That's the big thing that I found coming over. Oh, no, it's less.
All right, it's less by chances of probability.
Well, it's...
There you go.
So
you got a lot more denominations.
Yeah, we have less. We have less denominations. But the... when I was seeking, I put myself through various ideas of not just Christianity, but religion in general. And I had a very harsh three-tier to put it through. Science, history, philosophy. I had to survive those three. And I put every branch of the church through it. I put Christianity and other religions through it. Catholicism was the only one that came out unscathed. I mean, you're always, anywhere there's humans, you'll have problems. Okay. Anywhere there's humans, you'll have problems. But as far as the stances of the pillars of the church, they remained unscathed. I couldn't say that for anything else I researched. So, and I was very harsh. I can't tell how many times I came and threw things, all different ideas, at the church, and it remained unscathed.
Well, clearly you haven't looked into the Jehovah's Witnesses.
I will stand that, like, a huge strength of Catholicism is its big tent ability and, like, the ability to somehow keep together, even in a very tenuous sense, like, a variety of perspectives. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty unrivaled among denominations of that. Even in a place like the U.S. where Catholicism is most likely to trend towards a conservative evangelical-ish monoculture.
It's true.
So, I had props for that.
Hey, Keith, last thoughts?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I left it all on the floor here, guys. My last thoughts are all my thoughts. My brain is as much of a jumble as it's ever been, but this was actually a really good opportunity to discuss a lot of things that, like, I think in some cases there was like, okay, this is a gray area. In some places, like in the Skywatch, we've got like a very black and white, like these are people like peddling difficult stuff or not difficult stuff, but like very like bad faith stuff. We've got the middle. We've got the, you know, church militant where we're talking about some people who are true believers trying their best, but God maybe still like dealing poison and they don't even know it. And we've all managed to discuss these things without tearing each other's heads off. So there is possibility for everyone to come together and sort this stuff out.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Maybe that sounded too magnanimous and ecumenical, and maybe touchy-feely, but I'm feeling that was a lot of really good Coke and rum. And I went back for several dips in that pond, and I'm feeling just like peace and love. And
God forbid you tap into your emotion.
Gumpy?
I was just thinking, I'm like, what the heck are we going to do? Catholic, evangelical, the church as a whole, what are we going to do if Trump is back in office?
Oh, my God.
I mean, can we just reconcile as a church and just say, this is not good?
You know, there's nothing that brings people together like a lame duck president. And he would be that, like, 3 years into whatever hellscape that Trump would bring on us in a second term.
Yeah.
Just hold each other and cry.
That could be a seriously divisive thing with, me and my family members. Like, seriously, I mean, I know friends and family members who feel like he's still legitimately the president.
I know. But that draws more questions.
I know.
Because if he is still the president, are you going to say everything he did in Afghanistan was his fault? Because I don't... You're right.
You know how you end this? If you say if he's still the president, that means he can't run this time.
Well, what? I guess what I'm thinking, I'm like, if nothing could bind together the church and all its denominations, all of them.
Yeah.
Then something like that, surely the opposite can be held true. Surely divided even way more worse.
Way worse. Which I would argue is they're trying.
So that's kind of my thoughts on it. There's nothing taboo over brew. Love cooking.
So good.
I love Coke and rub a little too much.
He loves you, Keith.
Everybody, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We'll be back, of course, probably another 2 weeks. Godspeed. Good night. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, what now X, Tumblr, et cetera, you name it. Godspeed. Good night.